Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Hour of Timber and Building Supplies 1840 podcast. I'm your host, Paul Bullivant, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Lucas Whitehead from Andy's Man Club.
Yeah, lovely to be here.
Welcome. Andy's Man Club are our new group charity for the next 2 years, so we thought it would be a really good idea to get Lucas to come in and talk about the charity right at the start of what we're doing. So Lucas is the head of marketing and partnerships for Andy's Man Club and has been working at the charity for 4.5 years. In that time, the charity's grown from 27 support groups nationwide to 300. That was just a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, so well, actually, the 300th group happened the night before we're recording this. So that opened last night in Nottingham. So massive for us to get opening.
That's brilliant.
In there.
And then you've also just told me that it was your birthday. Not your birthday, Andy's Man Club's birthday yesterday, and you're 9 years old.
We are 9 years old, and that Nottingham group, that was our present, so to speak. So yeah, that really cemented our place as a charity. We had a video which we released back in, I think it were about a couple of days before the very first session actually opened, where our founder, Luke, who were very young at the time, still playing professional rugby league, he did an interview on Sky Sports and said that if anybody wanted to take this group further afield from Halifax and take it to Nottingham, for example, then that would be fantastic. So to do that for the 300th group, 9 years
so
later.
Grateful circle.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Was it deliberately Nottingham because of what Luke had said in that interview?
I think semi-deliberately. So we've been trying to get a group open in Nottingham for quite a while. Yeah. The Midlands proved to be quite a tough nut to crack for us as a charity. But we've got close to 40 groups in the Midlands. Nottingham being 300 were just really, really fitting, obviously with the link to the original video. But there's been quite a high level of demand for a group in Nottingham for a number of years. And for whatever reason, it hasn't happened until now. And we've got the doors open.
The doors aligned and that was it.
Yeah.
So for anybody who hasn't heard of Andy's Man Club, do you want to tell them what it is and why it started and how you've got to where you are?
Yeah, 100%. So we are a male suicide prevention charity. There is a distinction between us being a mental health charity and a male suicide prevention charity. And that distinction is that we are open to a lot of people who are just going through life crises or you know, difficult life circumstances. People don't actually have to have a diagnosed mental health condition to access our service. What we are a network of peer-to-peer support groups that run every Monday at 7 o'clock in those 300 locations nationwide and online. Those support groups, they're free to attend to anybody, they're free of any registration. You've got to be a man over the age of 18 to come along, hence the Man Club part of the name. But the charity were founded by the Roberts family, family who unfortunately lost a young man called Andy Roberts to suicide back in 2016. Andy were 23 at the time, so big shock to everybody who knew him, really. He worked in the construction industry as well. He had a good job. He had a young family, had a supportive group of friends. And as is often the case, after somebody takes their own life, his family were just left with a lot of questions. But after a while, they decided, you know, there's no use asking those questions. The reality is the same. And they decided that they wanted to do something as a bit of a legacy piece for Andy. The groups were created. 9 men attended on our first night in Halifax back in 2016. And now, 9 years later, we've got just short of 6,000 men attending every week in those 300 locations that we've mentioned.
Oh, fantastic. Now, when we first met, you were talking to me about the problem of suicide in the construction industry. Can you just tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so I think it's been something that's been talked to death, to be honest, really, the issue of suicide in the construction industry. Everybody knows that it's an issue. It's one of the industries that's got the highest rates of suicide. It's a male-dominated industry. 3/4 of all suicides in general are male. So we expect for male-dominated industries to have a higher rate of suicide. But I always go back to statistics that are from 2022. That year, there were 507 suicides in the construction industry, 503 of which were male, which is a horrible figure. In this country as well, we have an issue when it comes to actually reporting suicide. So the suicide figures that are reported every year, there are studies that show that they're actually 15 to 50% underestimated. So the problem's probably wider than we realise. But you look at the industry and you look at some of the reasons as to why, you know, people are taking their own lives. I think a slightly lazy explanation would be that sort of macho environment that there is in the construction industry.
Yeah.
I think there is an element of that, you know, where men feel as though they can't come forward and they can't talk. But realistically, you're talking about one of the most high-pressure environments that you've got as an industry. So you're talking about people who, you know, might not know when the next paycheck's going to come. They might not know when the next job's going to come. They're working long hours. You know, a lot of travel involved for a lot of people in that industry as well. So there are a lot of pressures that I think, you know, people are perhaps unaware of in the construction industry. It's an industry that's particularly important to me. I've got a lot of family who work in that industry. And I know, you know, I know what those pressures are. I've seen them firsthand. I mean, my granddad, he's 74. He's still working in the industry. He's a painter and decorator. Yeah, he's actually working about half a mile from here today. but I see the hard work he puts in. My uncle works for a construction firm over in Ireland, and I've seen the pressure that he's sort of been under, especially when he were, you know, a sole trader in the UK. And I just don't think that, you know, a lot of people realise the amount of pressure that people in that industry are actually under. And I think that, to my mind, is probably the reason why there's such a high rate of suicide in that industry.
Do you mean the pressure of going out and finding work and doing the work and getting paid and then finding the next job?
Yeah, definitely. I think those sorts of pressures and, you know, it does sort of tie into the traditional view of men and what it means to be a man. I think that you've got a lot of these guys who've been brought up in this male-dominated industry, as I say, and there's an expectation placed on them from a young age, and they're sort of conditioned almost to believe that they've got to be the breadwinner of the family. They've got to put, you know, food on the table. They've got to bear that, you know, economical responsibility for the family as well. And, you know, you combine those sort of factors with those pressures, you just end up in a position where you've got men who feel as though if they open up and if they talk about the issues they're going through, or they talk about those pressures, they feel as though they're burdening others. And they also feel weak potentially, or they feel, you know, vulnerable. And what we want to do really is we want to show men across every industry that opening up and displaying that vulnerability, it's a show of strength, it's not a show of weakness.
How do you work around that? So somebody comes to a meeting for the first time, it could be in a reasonably large group of, I don't know, 15, 20 people in a group. How do you get them to make the first steps and actually start talking?
Allow them to do it in their own time, more than anything. So there's never any pressure for us to actually, you know, encourage people to talk. The environment that they're in facilitates it. I mean, if I talk about my own experience, I personally, when I first attended, I thought it was going to be a load of rubbish. Like, I didn't think it'd be for me whatsoever.
Was that your first interaction with Andy's Man Club? You actually went to a session?
Well, no. So I'm a bit different. The majority of the male members of staff who work for, I say the majority, everyone apart from me, started off as a group user.
Okay.
It actually took me working for the charity to actually go to
and
a group.
Okay.
You know, so it's, but even then, I'd applied for this job. I got this job for the charity. And my main motivation, to be fair, for getting this job, I'd been through my own sort of issues, you know, as I'm sure I'll probably come on to. But my motivation at the time was, it's a charity that does a lot within the world of sport, and I want to do something that, you know, makes the world a better place.
Yeah.
And when I first went to a group, I'll be honest, I were really narrow-minded. I thought that it were going to be a room full of people that I wouldn't relate to. I thought that the experience of, you know, listening to other people talk about their problems, I thought that it'd make me feel worse, when in actual fact, it made me feel really comfortable in my own skin. It made me feel as though I could come forward and I could talk openly. And I think that that's the main sort of source of encouragement that we have as a charity, is just relying on other people's stories to make people sort of twig and think, hang on, I can relate to that a little bit. Maybe I'm not as strange or as unique as I thought I was. I think when people are going through issues, particularly, they feel isolated, they feel alone, they feel as though their issues are completely unique to them. And I think that hearing other people talk about their issues, you know, that may bear a few similarities, that is the most powerful way we can encourage people to
talk. So it's that is what triggers people to talk. They hear other people sharing, and then it gives them the confidence to share their.
Yeah, I think, you know, people think, oh well, if he can share that, then, you know, look what I can share. And I think, you know, that's when you walk into that room, it's bizarre, because I think the preconceptions people have are really different to what's actually going on in there. I think the rooms, you've got a perfect cross-section of society, really, especially in some of the really busy groups that we've got, you know, in major towns and cities. But I've been in groups before, to be fair, where my perception of people's been altered completely. I walked into, I think, my second ever group, and there were a bloke who came in who were in his 60s, and, you know, he was quite a big bloke. He looked a little bit punk, to be fair, like a bit of a punk rocker. And then there were a young lad who walked in, who looked really anxious, looked really shy, you know, didn't look like he were able to come forward and open up. And my perception straight away of these two people was that this 60-year-old man will be talking about anger issues. That's what I thought. I looked at him, took one look, and I thought, right, this is what he's going to be talking about. The other guy, I took one look at him, and I thought he's going to be talking about anxiety. And when they came in and they actually spoke, roles reversed.
Really?
And the guy who looked, you know, who were confident enough to go out wearing sort of outlandish clothing, with a guy who suffered massively from anxiety, and the guy who were really sheepish was the guy who actually suffered, you know, from anger issues. And it just completely shifts and alters your perception being in those rooms.
What does, just talk through a meeting. So anybody's listening and they've heard about Andy's Man Club, yeah, and they've kind of thought about it, but they're really nervous. What does a meeting actually look like?
It's really, really informal. So what'll happen is somebody will basically greet you on the door. They'll offer you a free biscuit and a brew, which, you know, if I'd have known that, I'd have probably attended before I got the job. But yeah, take you into a room. You'll be met with a circle of chairs. Basically, go pick a chair, and then a ball will get passed round until the chairs are full. And you'll answer 5 questions. The first 3 questions that you answer, they remain the same every week. They are, how's your week been? Can you give me a positive from your week? And is there anything you'd like to get off your chest? After that 3rd question, there's a break, which is where the peer-to-peer support element of the group actually kicks in. So, for example, when I were opening up about my issues, issues with anxiety and issues with addiction growing up, and also issues, you know, with my parents as well, I had people come forward and talk about their issues and say, look, these are services I used. This is, you know, methods I sort of used and mantras I remembered to get over my sort of problems. And then after that break and after that element of peer-to-peer support that gets shared, we have 2 more questions, which are usually, one of them's the change every week. One of them's usually something quite thought-provoking. The other one's usually a bit of fun. I mean, for example, the question that were a bit of fun last night was, it's barbecue season now. What are you putting on your grill? Right. And it might sound strange to go from, you know, people opening up about some really, really heavy stuff to that within the space of sort of 30 minutes. But we want people to just have that little uplift before they actually leave a session. And we want there to be something for everyone to answer. There'll be people who go to sessions for 3-4 weeks and they won't open up, but they'll answer those quick fire questions at the end. And that will give them the strength to sort of, you know, come out of the shell a little bit and open up.
Do your facilitators encourage people to talk, or do they really just stand away and leave each individual to make their own minds up?
I think it's a case-by-case basis. I think I think the encouragement will only come if you can tell somebody's really trying to articulate what they've been through and they're struggling to articulate. If you've got somebody who quite clearly is shut off, you know, and they don't want to open up, then that's fine. You know, they can pass the ball along. But if you have got somebody who's struggling, then I think a few words of encouragement, you know, just a gentle pat on the shoulder sometimes, you know, something like that. That is another method of encouraging people to open up, which does get used. But it really is in people's own time. We've got staff members who, like I said, started off as group users and they didn't open up for 6, 7, 8 weeks before they actually, you know, before the floodgates opened and they managed to talk about their issues.
Okay. What do, so in that instance where somebody's took 6, 8 weeks to talk and they're now working with you, what do they say about the experience of being allowed that space to come to terms with when they want to talk?
It's a mixed bag, but it's really positive. I mean, I take the example of one of my colleagues, Neil, and he won't mind me sharing this, but he attended on the first week and he thought, you know, this isn't for me at all. But something made him go back the week after. And then he went back the week after that. And then he started answering those quick fire questions. And then eventually he opened up and he hasn't looked back since then. So the feedback that we get is really positive, because, you know, if a lot of people who come to our group, for example, they might have been to counselling, they might have been to the NHS, they might have been to another, you know, to different services where perhaps there is more of an encouragement and more, you know, pressure to open up and more pressure to talk. The fact that people are allowed to do it in their own time and it's informal, I think, is what sets us apart, really, from quite a few people.
I'm just doing a coaching qualification.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of halfway through it. But one of the key things in coaching is space and giving people space to do their own thinking and you know, and talk when they're ready.
Yeah. And you know what? I think it's transferable, is that completely. You know, you've got to let people work things out themselves. And that is something that I'll always emphasise about this charity. It's not a place you come if you're looking for answers. It's a place you come if you want to open up and you want some help to find your own solutions and find your own answers to your problems. That's so important.
So, and your facilitators who run the courses, are they trained in either coaching or elements of therapy or counselling?
No, and that's deliberate. And, you know, we have got facilitators who, you know, have got psychology degrees, who are trained counsellors, but, you know, when they walk through the door, they're just Dave or Paul or whatever. You know, it's to leave those qualifications at the door, and that's key. But the training that we give them is just on how to actually run our sessions to the best of their ability. Obviously, you know, we get people coming forward who do need that more specialised level of support.
Yeah.
And those facilitators and volunteers that we've got, they have all the tools available, you know, to refer people should they need to. They can get in touch with, you know, with our safeguarding leads or anybody like that, and just encourage people then to go and find that additional level of support.
Do you have those other levels of support within the group, or is it you refer them outside of the group to partners who give those services?
We refer them outside, but I think an important thing to add is that the volunteers who run the groups, they all started off as group users who then eventually become volunteers, and they all have access to an additional level of support should they wish, you know, to have it. We give them access to 6 weeks free counselling should they wish to use it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, we know full well that there's a lot of people whose problems, you know, they do need that additional level of support, and we work with a lot of organisations. And I think one emphasis I'm trying to place a lot at the minute is the fact that a lot of people who come forward, they're dealing with complicated life scenarios. So, you know, we work closely with organisations like Drink Aware, for example, who try to help people work on problem drinking, with Step Change, who are a debt charity, who are absolutely fantastic in the work that they do, with GamCare, who are a gambling addiction charity as well. And we've got relationships with people who are specialists in the fields. And what we will do is we'll give our facilitators a bit of an education on who these organisations are. So should they come across somebody who needs that additional level of support, they just know straight away where to send them.
Is there any issue that's really common with people who are coming to you? Or is it just kind of the stuff you'd expect, like drinking, gambling, debt, just general life stress?
Yeah, I think general life stress is probably the best way to put it. But I think that you just have to look at what's sort of going on in the country, you know, in terms of the cost of living crisis, in terms of people having a lack of job security a lot of the time at the moment as well. Those are the most common issues. We do have a lot of people coming forward with relationship issues as well. A lot of dads who are struggling to see the kids, you know, so those people come forward quite a lot. But you really get... It's interesting because in different areas of the country, you get issues that are more relevant to those areas. So London, for example, isolation, especially from people who've recently moved to London, and then also work-related stress. Those are the two biggest drivers. Whereas, you know, if you go to like Wigan or Grimsby, you know, post-industrial northern towns, it's people who are struggling maybe with a lack of employment, struggling with cost of living. So it is a real mixed bag in terms of what we get.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think makes the biggest impact at the sessions? Is it the peer support and peer-to-peer talking, or is it just the setup of the group where you're giving space for people to process things and kind of work out their own answers?
It's a combination. I mean, for me, I think the most effective thing is that shared experience and that sort of that shared knowledge. But it is giving people that sense of relatability, and I can only go off my own sort of my own experience, really. But just knowing that you're not alone in your problems can be enough, and also sort of reframing your mind a little bit, because I think, like I said earlier, we brought up to think that if we admit that we're struggling, we're displaying weakness or vulnerability, and I think, you know, that this charity has taught me that that's a load of rubbish. And then, you know, also another thing that were big for me was the fact that it helped me to realise that if you're a confident person, you can still suffer with anxiety, and those two things, yeah, you know, they're not really related to each other. But it is that sort of altering of perceptions, that becoming more accepting of others and also becoming more accepting of yourself. And that's through listening to other people's stories. The stories that get shared in those rooms are so powerful, but there is also nothing more powerful than when you're struggling. If you see somebody who's a volunteer who is now saying that they're in a really strong position in life, you'll have an indication straight away that they've been that person who's struggling, sat in the chair that you're sat in a few years before. And, you know, you can see that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, basically. And that's what it's all about. It's about building that hope within people that things are going to get better.
That's cool. You started talking about what a meeting looks like and the process of it all, you mentioned a football that you pass around.
Yeah.
What's the significance of the football?
Do you know what? It's just a giant stress ball, really. So it's something for people to fidget with while they're talking, more than anything. But I think, to be honest, though, those footballs have heard some stuff. Like, honestly, because you can see, and I mean, I've been there myself. You'll have the football and you'll be sat, the room full of people, and you'd be sat actually talking to the football a lot of the time. But it is just something, it's a little bit of a comfort thing, really. But also, it does dictate the flow of the meeting, you know. So it does, if there are people who, you know, people who are dominating a session, for example, you know, it's easy to pass that ball on to somebody else.
Is that kind of one of the rules? Only you can talk if you've got the ball.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's a better way of putting it. yeah. That's only you can talk if you've got the ball. And that's, you know, it just does help to dictate the flow of the session.
Who came up with that idea? Do you know?
I don't think any of us want to take credit for it, because it's something that's gone off.
It just kind of naturally. Yeah.
I think in the first ever session, I think it was a rugby ball that we used, strangely enough, but we got the Andy's Man Club sponge balls made. But it's just a standard practice thing, but I think it's, for us, it holds a real significance, that talking ball. It really does.
Yeah, okay. Let's talk about a couple of the famous slogans that you've got as a charity. So on your T-shirt, you've got,
It's okay to talk
with the
fingers. So
where did that come from, and why is that important to the group?
So it was a campaign that our founder, Luke, ran back in 2016. So some of you might remember seeing this on Facebook, some of those that are listening. But basically, Luke posted a selfie on social media with an okay sign and an encouragement for people to actually open up about what they were going through. When he first posted it, it got no reaction whatsoever. You know, it sort of fell flat, which was strange. Luke were a professional rugby league player. He had a decent audience, really, on his social media channels, but it just didn't work. Just scratched my nose, sorry. Just itching like anything. Right. Where were I? Yeah, so a professional rugby league player with Luke. He had quite a decent platform, you know, on social media. But he did what every self-respecting man does, really. He took it to his missus to sort out. She had a look through it, noticed a few spelling mistakes, and also noticed that the photo we used were a little bit threatening, to be fair. So she chucked a few Instagram filters on it, made a couple of corrections, and then it just absolutely exploded. And it was a campaign that really were responsible for the first phase of growth of Andy's Man Club. You had, you know, famous people, Ricky Gervais being one of the most famous who actually took part in the campaign as well after seeing it on socials. You had sports people who took part in the campaign as well. It hit around 100 million people worldwide, did the campaign when it went out. So that's really significant. But for us, it's something that we stick with. We'll always go with it's okay to talk as opposed to it's good to talk, or as opposed to it's okay to not be okay. The reason we go with it's okay to talk is, you know, again, it's about that comfortability thing. Yeah. You know, it's all right if you want to talk. That's what we're saying. And then the other sort of hashtags, the one we sort of don't use whatsoever is it's okay to not be okay. Because we view that, we get it, like, you know, we understand the sentiment of, yeah, it's all right if you're not feeling all right, but realistically, it's not all right. You want to feel better. And that's what we want to encourage people to do.
It really encapsulates the charity to a T, doesn't it? It's okay. Yeah. To talk, because as you've talked to me, and we were talking about how we as a business could help you, and it struck me, you weren't going, can you fundraise. It was about how can you help us get more people to come to the clubs to talk.
Yeah, and that's key. That is the key for us. I mean, we'll always be motivated by that above everything else. You know, we do a lot of really, you know, really exciting, really cool stuff. I mean, you know, we've worked with Chris Kamara recently. We work with professional football clubs. We, you know, yesterday I were in Parliament, as I mentioned to you already. But for us, none of it really matters as much as getting people through the doors. That's what we want to do, and that's always the aim behind everything that we do. You know, we want to, if we're working with a celebrity or we're working with somebody with a high profile, we want to use their profile to encourage other people to come along to the group. You know, we'll never be that organization that's like, you know, shaking charity boxes at people or anything like that. The aim of everything we do is all geared around those Monday night sessions, and they take priority. And ultimately, you know, if we do a good enough job at those and we get enough people through the door, then we're going to make a dent in those suicide numbers, which are still climbing year in, year out. And that's our focus. And I think that for us, the relationship obviously that we've got with Haworth now is really important, because we know that, you know, you're working again in a male-dominated industry. You've got a number of branches nationwide. You know, a few advocates within the business who I've spoken to already who are really passionate about this and this topic. You know, and what you are is you're a vehicle for us to obviously get in front of more people, to encourage more people to come forward. And if you know, your client base or your customer base or your followers or any of your staff want to come forward and open up, then that to us is more significant and more powerful than anything.
It's interesting for me. So we always have a company charity.
Mm.
We try and run for a couple of years to give us time to work with people. And what we do is we ask colleagues to nominate a number of charities, and then we vote, the business votes, for the one that we pick. And when Andy's Man Club came up, I thought that's a really good one that would interest me. And I know a couple of colleagues who thought the same, but I thought it might be a bit too male, and obviously with a mixed workforce. But what really blew me away was the amount of female colleagues who actually said, no, we're really up for this, because we've had a husband, a partner, a family member who have been involved and know what a massive impact it's made to them.
And I think that role that women play can't be understated as well.
Expand on that, because one of my other questions to you, which you'd kind of half answered, so I wasn't going to bother asking it, was what would you say to somebody who's listening, who's struggling but doesn't feel ready to speak up or walk through the door?
Mm.
Is that where partners come into it?
Yeah, a lot of the time, so yeah.
You over the line?
Yeah, a lot of the time. I think partners, you know, mums, daughters, nieces, friends, you know, women who are really significant to men, they provide a lot of encouragement to go forward and to basically open up. You know, we're not naive enough to think that, you know, that everything's rosy and everything's okay for women either, you know. And, you know, we know that if you look at the statistics, women are more likely to actually attempt suicide than men. Men are just more likely to be successful. But women are a lot more open in talking to the partners and, you know, encouraging the partners to come forward and encouraging the men in the life to come forward and to open up. And that's really significant. So the role that women play, I'd say that, you know, a good 80, 90% of the people who come through our doors come through because a woman in the life has encouraged them to do so.
Yeah.
I say encouraged. I've been at sessions where, you know, a man's wife has literally thrown him through the door and said, you'll be sleeping on the couch tonight if you don't give this a go. You know, that you see that sort of thing sometimes. But the encouragement that I would give as an aside to that, to anybody who's considering going but they don't, you know, perhaps feel ready to open up or anything like that, you know, just give it a go. the only thing you're going to lose is a couple of hours on a Monday night, you know, versus potentially letting your problem get worse. If you let your problem get worse, we know that a lot of men, they only actually access support when they've reached that position of crisis. There's a horrendous statistic that we've been made aware of recently, which is that 3/4 of men who take their own life, they have not engaged with any sort of health service or any sort of, you know, they've not accessed help, basically. So you can look at that two ways. You can either think that, you know, a lot of these men are going through life crises, which they are, definitely. Or you can look at it and think that a lot of men, they wait too long to actually try and access help and support. So
why don't men try and access help through kind of the traditional channels?
I think it does tie back into that sort of pride that a lot of men have, you know, where they feel as though they're admitting defeat. A lot of men, to put it bluntly as well, I think there's too much of a, we place too much of a relationship between mental illness and suicide as well. A lot of men who are perhaps feeling suicidal, they aren't mentally ill. They haven't got mental ill health. They feel suicidal because of the life circumstances they're going through. And a lot of men, they perhaps don't want to be labelled with that sort of mental health label. But also, I think that a lot of men are scarred by experience of opening up from a very young age. I think, you know, little things like, you know, boys not being allowed to cry at school, that type of thing, it just builds another layer of sort of resistance to opening up and you know, another layer of basically stopping you from accepting that there is something very wrong. And it's something that men are conditioned not to do. But, you know, I think we are starting to see a change, but we know from the work that we do that a lot of men who do open up through the traditional channels, you know, through the NHS, for example, they're met with a lot of obstacles and barriers. It's not always the case, but, you know, we've heard stories of people being asked to fill in questionnaires, like ranking the mental health from 1 to 10, you know, and it's stuff that's quite demeaning and stuff that needs to change. And hopefully it will change very soon. But I think that, you know, this, it's a non-traditional channel is what we're doing, but it is also, you know, painfully simple and it's painfully easy to access as well. So.
And so the big advantage of Andy's Man Club is there's no referral, there's no booking. You literally pole up 7 o'clock on a Monday.
That simple.
And walk through the door.
That simple. And there can't be any obstacles. You know, if you're a man who's struggling or if you, you know, even if you're a lady who's trying to find, you know, support for one of the men in your life, as soon as you see a barrier that could prevent you from actually accessing that support or finding that support for somebody, you know, it's just got to be simple. It's got to be uncomplicated. It shouldn't be complicated for men to open up, but, you know, we know that it is, so we try to remove a few of those barriers if we can.
And just for people who are listening who might be interested in coming to a group, how do they find the local group?
So you can head to www.andysmanclub.co.uk. There is a full list of our locations on there. There's a map and a nice little group finder tool on there as well for people. But, you know, for those people who are listening who might want to just get to grips a little bit more with what it is we do, get more of a feel for it, I'd say follow us on social media. We're on every single social media you could imagine, pretty much. So, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok. Give us a follow. See some of the stuff that we're up to as well. And I'd just emphasise as well, it's not all doom and gloom. You'll see that we have a laugh doing what we do. It's a very heavy topic, but, you know, what we want to do is we want to create happiness and create laughter and hope for people as well.
And it's every Monday, 7 o'clock till 9 o'clock. Every Monday, except bank holidays.
Bang on. Yeah, you've got it right. Yeah.
And I think you mentioned there's also an online offering for anybody who, I guess, doesn't have a local club or maybe doesn't want to jump straight into face-to-face.
Yeah, there is online available as well, and that's available by emailing info@andysmanclub.co.uk.
Do many people take that up?
Yeah, so we get a couple of hundred online. I should add as well, you know, I mentioned those group numbers. When we have big numbers at a group, we always split into smaller groups to ensure everybody has a chance to be heard. So the most you'll actually see in an individual session that's being run is probably around 15. So we do break it down a little bit. But yeah, we've got a couple of hundred people who use online every week as well.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah. Right, so we've talked about It's Okay to Talk. The other marketing campaign you've got on at the minute I'm currently sporting, and that's Mission Possible.
Mission Possible, yeah.
Talk about that for us.
So I found a Luke and his friend Johnny. They had a bit of a madcap idea last year, which was to challenge themselves to do all 5 UK Ironmans this year, you know, as you do, because one's not enough. And basically just got them thinking, we're challenging ourselves to do something that we don't think is possible. There'll be a lot of people out there who this year, you know, they could gain benefit from just challenging themselves to do something that they thought to be impossible, like I say. So whether it's, for some people, I mean, we heard of somebody whose Mission Possible was to actually leave his house and go out for a day for the first time. Somebody who were disabled, who struggled with the mental health issues, he managed to do that, and he went for a day out in Doncaster a few weeks ago. So ranging from stuff like that to these sort of mammoth challenges, we're just encouraging people to find what's possible for them this year, to challenge themselves sort of beyond the pale and you know, just do something. And I mean, like I say, it doesn't have to be 5 Ironmans. For me, my Mission Possible this year is to get back into racket sports. I used to play racket sports when I was younger. I've started playing paddle now, so I'm one of those people. So, you know, that's been my challenge, and it's benefited me greatly. You know, we've got people at work who one of them's Scafell Pike, you know, that type of thing. So it's a range of challenges that we're encouraging people to get involved in. And then obviously just tag us when you do with the hashtag Mission Possible.
So it's anything at all that you've just never done before.
Yeah.
You don't have to be crackers like Luke doing 5 Iron. I saw Luke posting the other day in the run-up to one of his Iron Men.
Yeah.
And he'd like travelled all over the country late at night, here, there and everywhere, and then did an Iron Man at the end.
Yeah, he's just a different breed completely. I mean, I saw him a couple of weeks ago. We filmed a video of him doing a bit of a cycle in preparation for an Ironman. And I think that morning he'd done 120 miles or something. Something ridiculous, like got up early, did 120 miles on his bike. And then I think he were off up to Inverness that afternoon. So, yeah, just wild. Like, he'll get it done, though, 100%. We know what he's like, but it can be anything. It doesn't have to be those 5 Ironman challenges, you know, or anything like that. It could even be teaching yourself how to cook a new meal. You know, it can be anything that you just didn't think were possible or that you didn't think you could do, learning how to do it and doing it.
Could it be one of my colleagues coming on a podcast who never thought he could come on a podcast before?
Someone like D? Yeah, someone
that
like
could
D,
be
a, yeah. Uh-huh. That'd be a great one, wouldn't it? Yeah, he might even get a T-shirt if he does that. You know, we've got some in car.
I'll have to see whether I can get him on and post it, couldn't he, with Mission Possible?
He could do, that'd be good. Yeah, it'd be really good.
That's a good idea. I'll see what we can do with that.
Yeah.
Right. So what's the plans now for Andy's Man Club? You've just opened your 300th club last night.
Yeah.
Where to next?
Keep growing. It's just dead simple, really. Keep growing as a charity. And that doesn't just mean group numbers. It means grow the support that we've got, you know, sort of behind the scenes, keep growing the staff team, keep growing the board of trustees that we've got as well, you know, and just adding even more expertise, even more knowledge, and even more sort of local strength as well. And then in terms of group numbers, the long-term aim is to be in as many locations as McDonald's are nationwide, you know, and hopefully we'll do a bit more good than they do. I say that, I'll probably call there after I've been here, but yeah. That's the aim. We want to be accessible to every man in the UK. And ultimately, you know, the biggest frustration, I think, for anyone working in this sphere at the minute is that there's some fantastic work going on. There's some really hard work going on from a number of charities. I mean, you know, if you look at charities like James's Place, like the UK Men's Sheds Association as well, you know, people who we view as collaborators, not competitors. You know, there's no such thing as competition in this field. But the frustration that we've all got at the minute is that those suicide numbers are still continuing to climb. And, you know, we won't rest until we no longer have to exist. Will that ever happen? We don't know. But, you know, we are a self-destructive charity. We want talking to be normal, and we want men to stop taking their own lives.
That's great.
Yeah.
So to wrap this up,
yes,
it would normally be customary for me to ask my guest what's the best piece of advice they've ever been given. However, you've hijacked the final spot and you've got some questions for me. Do you want to just tell the audience?
Yeah, of course.
About this?
So I'll go direct to camera if I can this time. That camera, that one there. So we've got these playing cards, and basically those two quick fire questions, which we've explained, earlier in the podcast at the end of our sessions. A few of them are on these playing cards. So what we're going to do is we're going to ask Paul to pick a card, and then I might pick a card as well, after as well, and basically just get him to answer it. So it could be something deep, it could be something completely daft. But yeah, over to you, Paul.
I hope it's daft, not deep.
Yeah.
I don't know about deepness.
Pick a card.
All right, here we go. I should have brought my glasses. If you could choose any item of luxury clothing, what would it be and why?
Yeah.
Yes. So, I'm an avid runner.
Okay.
Okay. I'm not built for marathon running, but I do run marathons.
Mm.
And when I go to races, I see all these people wearing these Nike, I think they're called Vaporfly, high-tech shoes with, I don't know, it's got like titanium or something in, that apparently makes you run faster.
Yeah.
That's what I need.
Very good.
But I don't just need it to shave off like 2 minutes. I need like an hour and a half, I get off mine. So they'd have to be the best Nike Vaporflies in the world.
They are very, very comfortable, Luke, as a pet. Yeah, definitely. Oh. They're lovely.
I need some of those, Luke.
Very good. Right. You give him a shuffle. That's a good question.
This is better than my best piece of advice.
Yeah, well, is probably in there. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
I think if you don't mind, and in full support of the charity, I'm now going to adopt this as our final question on all of our podcasts.
Definitely. Let's go for that one. Oh, God. What is one of your favourite attributes about yourself?
Oh, come on, be.
My good looks. No,
your legs.
Yeah, I've got big legs, to be fair. Favorite attributes about myself, I'd say I'm a bit of a fountain of useless information and useless knowledge. So I'd say that, to be honest. So I've applied to be on The Chase as well.
All right.
So I've got auditions coming up, and hopefully it won't only be a nice attribute. Hopefully it'll help me make a bit of money as well. But I've got a lot of random areas of expertise. One of them is Italian football. So that'd be my mastermind subject.
What's your favourite Italian team?
Lazio. Yeah, because I went to go see him play. I've seen Lazio, I've seen Napoli, I've seen AC Milan, Atalanta.
You're proper.
Yeah,
Serie A fan, aren't you?
I love it, absolutely love it. But yeah, Lazio just hold a special light place for me. So yeah, they're my team.
Lucas, it's been an absolute delight having you on. You have been a fantastic guest for us.
Thank you.
I'm going to have you on again before we finish our next season, so we can talk about what we've been doing and where we've got to.
Yeah.
In the meantime, so thank you. In the meantime, to our audience, thank you so much for joining us again. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you have enjoyed it, it'd be great if you could like and subscribe to any of our feeds. And it'd be even better if you could share what we're doing with anybody who you know, who you think might be interested. And then I guess the final thing to do, since it's Andy's Man Club, is to say, it's okay to talk. Thank you.
Cheers.